SBS Radio.
Well, for 2021, it's the very first time we're going to have our science and technology segment with Ray Johnston, who is the editor of science and technology at NITV Radio. Happy New Year to you, sis. Welcome to 2021.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you too. I'm so glad to be here in 2021. Hopefully it's a better year.
I know. Let's hope so. Hey, the COVID is still about. As my dad says, it's about keep your head down, he says all the time.
That's but, just still got to be safe.
And positive, I think, too, you know, because it was a tough year last year for many of us, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've got some good news on the horizon with some vaccines and how they're going to be rolled out to remote and rural communities as well, which is good. So I think there's a lot to look forward to this year for sure.
I think there is indeed. Well, let's get started for today. We've got a bit to get through. But first up, you're going to tell us about some platypus who may no longer have their home where they originally habitated.
Yeah, this is a bit of a sad one. Researchers have looked for platypus DNA. This is a thing that they can test for in waterways. They've tested 54 different waterways around Brisbane. So they looked at Bremer River in the mid to upper area, and also Scrubby and Slacks Creeks. And they also looked at Kedron Brook and Creek, which is north of Brisbane. And platypus have been seen there forever. And the scientists in this team have even recorded platypus in these waterways recently, but they couldn't find any platypus DNA at any of the sites that they've tested. They tested multiple times, and there haven't been any sightings for a few years now. So the researchers are really worried at the moment that the land use near these waterways, the development, they might have led to the kind of habitat where platypus just can't survive. And they really want people to know about this study because they hope that it encourages more investigations on platypus to identify how much they've declined over the years within the region, and to also look at a big statewide review of their conservation status so that we can look at protecting them into the future.
How interesting. So they absolutely have no idea where the platypus may have ventured off to.
They have no idea. It's a big mystery. And look, I'm hoping that they're just hiding in a burrow around a corner somewhere. That'd be a really nice thought. But it really is a worry, you know, when we're looking at development in areas where we do have animals like platypus, and we're not really sure of what kinds of numbers we have of these animals at the moment. So there needs to be a bit more care and a bit more attention paid to the platypus these days.
Couldn't agree more with you. Now from platypus, new research showing feral cats are indeed a triple threat compared to other native predators. What's going on there, Ray?
Yeah, when you look at native predators like quolls, for example, they're saying that feral cats pose a triple threat because of their numbers, because of how intensely they hunt, and also because of their ability to live in a wide range of environments. So they can survive pretty much anywhere on this continent. So this study found that compared to a native predator, like for example the spotted tail quoll, that's what was used in this study, prey are 20 to 200 times more likely to encounter a feral cat. That's a huge amount of feral cats that we have out there. And you know, this study, it kind of explains what they're calling disproportionate impacts of feral cats on a really big range of native Australian wildlife. And they've had this question that they've asked for ages, and it is, you know, why invasive predators have had such a huge impact on biodiversity worldwide, not just in Australia, you know, as opposed to, you know, the native predators that are there. And the usual explanation, it's kind of a bit of victim blaming, really. They say that the prey is naive, that the animals are just unable to respond because the predator is unfamiliar. But rather than focus only on how the prey responds, this study is pretty special because it shows that understanding how the predator behaves and how that's different from other native predators, that can help us predict how much of an impact it is going to have on native wildlife. So a bit of flipping the script with where the focus is there.
I love that, Ray.
Yeah, I think it's an important way to look at it. I think we do tend to think that way, don't we? It's like, oh, you know, all these poor birds, they just can't defend themselves against the cat. And it's like, no, wait, why are the cats there? Why are there so many of the cats? And that's the part that we can look at controlling. So I think there's some positivity in that also very sad story. Sorry, sis.
Oh, good, sis. Now, from feral cats, we're going to be talking about extreme drought areas, sis. What can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, by the end of this century, the global land area and population in what they call extreme to exceptional drought, so severe drought, it could more than double. And this is according to international research. So researchers from all over the world have come together and looked at the water that's available all over the planet in lakes and reservoirs and rivers and wetlands and, you know, snow and ice and soil, groundwater, everywhere. And they call that collectively terrestrial water storage, or TWS. So that's all of the water in all of the water sources on all of the planet is called terrestrial water storage. And they found that this water is expected to decline over the next 80 years, especially in the southern hemisphere, our hemisphere. And it's driven primarily by water declines in Australia and also in South America, but mostly in Australia. And the researchers on this study say that it really highlights the importance of needing to fight climate change and looking at ways to improve how we're managing our water sources. You know, we've had mismanagement of our rivers and our waterways on this continent for so long now. And those, you know, it's having a global impact at this stage. So we really need to be paying attention to that. And that's what this study really highlights.
And it also reminds me of the very fine work that our ancestors did to back in the day to look after our waterways and keep them healthy, sis.
Absolutely. And we still have many of our mob working in water conservation and those kinds of environmental areas these days that need their voices heard and need their knowledge shared with decision makers that have the power to protect these places.
Absolutely. Now we go from extreme drought to talk about gadgets of the week, sis. What's new and what's about?
Yeah, well, this is a big week, sis. It's the Consumer Electronics Expo is underway. Now, this is, for context, this is the biggest electronics expo in the world.
Wow.
This is the biggest gathering of gadgets in the world, and it's been going since the 60s, which I find fascinating because they were showing off just little pocket radios and things. But now it's where you go to learn about all the latest, you know, TVs and radios and phones and all those sorts of things. But also it's where you come across all the weirdest, newest inventions that may or may not be available to everyone yet. And because of COVID, obviously, this expo has gone online this year. It's all virtual. So my inbox has just been inundated with all of these new inventions. And I thought I'd let you know about some of the more exciting ones because they're pretty wild. We've got a laser hair growth cap. So if you're going a bit bald, this is a hat that you can wear and it apparently grows your hair back, which I find pretty funny.
I think that's funny too.
There's one here that I reckon my mum needs. It's a tracking device for when you lose your glasses.
That's a good one.
Right.
That happened to my cousin the other day. She thought her dog had chewed her glasses.
Were they on her head?
No, a couple of days later I got a text saying they were downstairs on her reading chair, so where she left them.
Where they belong.
Yeah.
It's always where they belong.
She needs that device, sis.
Yeah, for sure. There's also one that I really need, and it's an artificial intelligence-powered keyboard that stops you from making typos.
Ooh,
so it reduces typos by 40%. There's been some really interesting stuff, a lot of COVID-related stuff as well. So there's, you know, social distancing cameras that will send alerts to your boss if people at work are too close to each other, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
And there's also just some really interesting things that monitor our bodies and our lives. So like smart clothing, wearing a t-shirt that's tracking your heart rate. So I'd be really interested to see which of these gadgets become available for people to actually buy and own in the future. But yeah, I'm getting a sneak peek at a lot of really fun stuff at the moment.
Sounds fun. And it'd be interesting to know which gadgets actually work in real life too, sis.
That's it as well. Like, a lot of these sound really good, and then when you go to test them out, they just do not do what they say they were going to do. So that's why it's always really important to read a lot of reviews before you buy anything. Even if something's in the shop, it might not work as well as you think it's going to. So tech reviews are really important for that, especially if it costs a lot, you know?
That's such a good idea. And, you know, not only for tech reviews, but I've been looking at buying a washing machine lately, sis, and I've had a look at some different models and I've been checking out the various reviews, which has really helped me make my decision, which is pretty deadly.
Yeah, washing machines are tech as well. That's all tech reviews.
Of course,
that fits
it
in
is
the category.
Tech review, isn't
yeah.
it? Of course.
Washing
yeah.
machines, vacuum cleaners, fridges, all that stuff. You know, there's so many really good people out there just testing all this stuff out and letting you know whether or not it's worth your money, because it's a lot of money to spend and you don't want to get it wrong.
No, you don't. And I was going to go with kind of a top model that I thought was a great brand and I couldn't go wrong. But at the end of the day, the reviews weren't that good for what I was looking at. So anyway, on to the next thing. Which brings us to a newly discovered bacteria, sis. What can you tell us about this and breaking down greenhouse gases and toxic pollutants?
Yeah, I know that bacteria might not sound like the most exciting thing, but
I know,
this
right?
is, trust me. So soil bacteria, they play a really big role in keeping our atmosphere in check. And it turns out that they actually play a lot bigger role than we ever thought, thanks to some research actually out of Monash University. And they've shown that a whole range of bacteria in the soils can break down. They eat gases like carbon monoxide and methane, the greenhouse gas methane. So all of these gases that are contributing to climate change in a negative way can be eaten up by bacteria. And this also changes how we thought that bacteria lived, because we always thought that bacteria just eats decaying vegetation, you know, old food and leaf matter and, you know, all that sort of stuff in the soil. But this shows that they can live on other things, like just gases. They don't actually need to eat food. They can live on the air. And they found this whole new family of methane-eating bacteria. They've called it Methylotropocium.
Right. And I'm glad you're saying that, not me, sis.
And they've called them breatharians because they can live on air. So it's like,
wow.
Which is
really
cute.
Want to say those two words together, though. I'd be totally lost.
Right?
Yeah.
And I just found this really, really fascinating, because it's, you know, not only changed the way that we look at bacteria and how it changes the air that we're breathing, but also how it can change the world. And, you know, we've got hydrogen and carbon monoxide and methane. Like, this is all increasing in our atmosphere because of human activities, even though we're aware of the damage that it does. So for these bacteria to be able to potentially help us fight that, I think is really incredible. And it's not like as though they're in small numbers either. Breeding bacteria is pretty much one of the simplest things that we can do in science and on this planet. It just happens.
Quite so extraordinary, really, isn't it?
It really yeah. is. I told you bacteria could be exciting.
Yeah, you make it sound exciting and cool, right?
I'll take it.
Which brings us to the end, unfortunately, for this week of our science and technology segment with Ray Johnston from NITV. Lovely to chat with you again, and happy new year, sis.
Always great to chat with you, Kerry Lee.
Yeah.
Happy new year, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you again next week.
All right. Till then, I'll see you next time. Thanks, Ray.
See you then.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.